And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Let me tell you something. We are so blessed to have you, the audience, as listeners. We know Donald Trump's going to be on at 9 o'clock. We understand that. All right. So, but you know, well, that aside, I just want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. These are issues we're talking about, we've been talking about, that are extremely critical to our way of life, to our constitutional republic, to our but even more important than that, for the sake of our children. And one of the people that I've got a lot of respect for is Sean from the SGT Report. Folks, if you go to our video page on our YouTube channel, and I ask once again, and you've come through, but let me ask again, I ask for everyone to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Even if you never go there, just subscribe, because it does keep us, it provides a level of insulation for us. But we do hope you go there. But on the interview from yesterday we did with Angela, Pizzagate Angela, as she referred to herself on Twitter, now banned, within that, within the description of that 30-minute video we did with her yesterday, is a link to Sean, to his Sean SGT Report interview about this very topic. It's one of the most, to me, one of the most insightful and informational interviews that I've heard in a long time. And to me, the guy that really gets, you know, carries the water on this topic is Sean from the SGT Report, and we're so happy to have him back. And I just, again, folks, go to his website, follow what he does, listen to and watch his videos. This guy knows his stuff. Sean, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Doug and Joe, thank you so much for having me back. And that adulation is really not necessary. All I'm doing is sharing some of the wonderful research that has been done by so many other citizen journalists in the case of Pizzagate and Pedigate. So many of them go nameless, as you know, Doug. Others have names. Some of them I will mention during this presentation that I prepared for you guys tonight. I have a number of sound bites. I want to set the historical record straight so that anybody that would demonize those of us who are researching Pizzagate will need to take a step back before uttering any slander or libel and putting it our way, because all we are doing is reporting facts and presenting circumstantial evidence, which I know you, Doug, have said is the most difficult type of evidence to manufacture.
It is. It is indeed, because, for obvious reasons. You can manufacture physical evidence. People do it all the time. But circumstantial evidence is most difficult. You go ahead, start, I guess, fire at will, because you got the floor.
All right. Well, I just want to say, Joe, so glad to be back on with you as well. I think you're both just doing such a service to humanity, so thank you. Thanks for having Pizzagate Angela on. She's become a fast friend. And I was listening to the interview prior to me coming on here with Paul Williams, and what a fantastic interview. And I hope you have Paul back again soon, because I didn't know what he said, which was, before he wrote the book Gladio, Operation Gladio, he didn't know about the deep state. And when he found out about how he's been sold out, we've all been sold out by these intelligence agencies, his faith was shattered. He was devastated. And I think that's how all of us who are awakening to this stuff are feeling. I mean, right now, you guys, we're being treated like a woman in an abusive relationship with a cheating, misogynistic pig of a husband. And it's almost as though if that woman found evidence on her husband's cell phone that he was cheating on her, because he left it open and texts with his mistress were coming through, and she brought it to his attention, he would beat the crap out of her and then take her before a judge and have her put in the loony bin for having gotten that evidence without his permission. I mean, that's really what we're up against here, because all of the evidence we're going to present here tonight is smoking gun evidence of what is being called Pizzagate, which is the DC-centric pedophile child trafficking ring, and Pedogate is the global child trafficking ring. So I just want to set the stage with a sound clip from Hunter S. Thompson, who appeared on the David Letterman show in 1987 or 8, we're not clear which, I believe it was late 87, And Hunter Thompson has he's been alleged to have been involved in the direction of snuff films. I'd like to play this soundbite for you guys. You ready?
Fire, Will.
Here it comes.
You ever hike up into the mountain?
Oh, yeah, I do that I like to kill.
And when you say kill, you're talking about what, neighbors? What?
We don't want to talk about shooting people, do we?
No, but you're teasing when you say you like to kill, right?
Yeah. No, I'm not teasing. I used to like to kill. When I realized that I was hunting
you're
in order to
hunting?
Kill.
You like hunting?
Well, I did. I
yeah.
quit.
Yeah. But I know that when you
But I quit because I realized I was not hunting for meat. So I was hunting because I like to kill.
Yeah. Have you talked to anyone about this stuff?
Were you guys able to hear that okay?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Good old Hunter Thompson.
Yeah, so Hunter S. Thompson, the gonzo journalist on David Letterman, and Letterman says, you're teasing, right, that you like to kill people. Because, I mean, he literally says in this clip, we don't want to talk about hunting people on national TV, do we? Letterman says, you're teasing, right? And he says, yeah, no, I'm not teasing. I used to like to kill, and now I don't do that anymore. So, circumstantial evidence, a very crazy soundbite, but Hunter S. Thompson himself has been implicated by Paul Bonacci, one of the children from the Franklin cover-up, one of 80 children, two of whom went to prison for telling the truth, whereas the other 78 were forced by the FBI to recant their testimony or face up to 500 years in prison for perjury. Here's Ted Gunderson explaining that in his own words.
And what happened when all of this came to light? The FBI stepped in. Cross-examined every one of the children and told them if they did not recant their testimony, they would be liable to as much as 530 years in prison for perjury. They were grilled for hour on hour. The ones who didn't recant ended up either dead or in jail.
All right. So now my next clip, if you want me to play it, is testimony from Paul Bonacci himself once he was incarcerated, in which he explains, okay, I'll play this for you, because I think it's very important, given what we just heard Hunter S. Thompson say. Now, before I play this soundbite, I want the audience to understand that Paul Bonacci himself testified that when he was being transported to some place in the woods, it sounds a lot like Bohemian Grove to me, they stopped in Las Vegas, and they picked up a man who he says was named Hunter Thompson. He said Hunter Thompson was the man who ran the camera during snuff films. Let me play this clip for you.
What they had us do is they had their camera set up, they let him off so he could run. They had us chase him down. They told us what we did, we were supposed to chase him down, and then we were supposed to drag him back. We were both figuring he was going there. So we drove him down after he started running. We dragged him around and stuff.
Whoa. How far did you chase him?
About 20 feet.
That's it?
It wasn't that fast.
Can you guys hear that okay? I know that's not very good audio. Should I just translate?
Yeah, go ahead and translate. It's a little rough.
It really is.
People can find it on YouTube, I believe.
It has subtitles on it, and basically he's describing how he and another boy were forced to chase a third boy, a smaller boy, drag him back, and then he witnessed that boy being murdered. So I think it needs to be said that between the Franklin cover-up, Jimmy Savile and his crimes in the UK that have been covered up for decades, and more recently now Sir Edward Heath, who has been accused by now adult victims of being involved in a satanic ritual child sacrifice ring in which as many as 16 children were murdered, and Heath died in 2005. I think in light of these historical facts, it needs to be said that Pizzagate is just a DC-centric story of pedophilia and potentially child trafficking and child sacrifice. So now I just want to play this clip from John Podesta, who very recently has said that and there's nothing here. You know, it's all fake news. It's all been debunked. I'm sure you guys have heard this clip, haven't you?
Yes, we have. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Is this from the latest interview from about a week ago?
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay. And I just want to draw one thing to your attention as you listen to this. You'll notice, of course, and I was listening earlier, so I know Pizzagate Angela mentioned this. Never during this opportunity, to set the record straight, does John Podesta say, I would never ever hurt a child, and I am going to go after all of these people that have been libeling and slandering me, spreading these falsehoods, because it's absolutely untrue, 100% untrue. He doesn't say that. He says it's been debunked by the mainstream media. Here's the clip.
I just want to talk about, just tell us about that, when fake news became part of your life in the course of the campaign, when you started noticing it and what you did about it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it's subterranean. In large part, you know, it shows up in the Facebook news feed, but you don't see it because it's not, if anything, it's being debunked in the mainstream media. So in those sources of news, it's you don't touch and feel it as much as maybe you'd imagine, but it's sinister. And it's a kind of vile stream that's running under the ground.
I'll pause it there before I continue, because I'd really like to have a conversation with you guys about your thoughts on that, because I agree with him. I think there's a vile stream running under the ground that involves child trafficking, okay? So it's a very interesting choice of words, and never once does he really profess his innocence. He just says that the mainstream Mockingbird media has debunked it.
Well, I can say this, okay? In my experience with criminal investigators, where I was part of interviews, and this is especially true when children are involved or abuse or domestic situations. The response by the suspect is I shouldn't say always. There's this level of outrage. How can anyone possibly ever accuse me of that? I would never do such a thing. The level of the attempts to clear one's name of any accusation of child abuse or abuse in general is usually first and foremost. I mean, even in the best of circumstances, given the fact that this is a public venue in this interview, his non-denial, in my view, my professional view as an investigator, and this is only my opinion now, folks, but I find it suspect. Because I would be more outraged. You know, how in the world can anyone accuse me of that when I would never do that? I've got children, I've got nieces, nephews, whatever.
Yeah, he's not, I mean...
It's non-existent.
He's not being accused of helping sell, you know, the Hillary Clinton pay-for-play scandals or Benghazi. I mean, this is something totally different. And for him to give the bogus excuse and saying, well, it's been debunked by the mainstream news as fake...
And
it's just ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, to call it sinister.
My
goodness.
But I will say this. There is also a line that people cross when they protest too much. That's also a red flag. So, but in this case, it's totally absent and sanitized, perhaps is the word. Good catch, by the way.
Well, and I'm sure that you guys have discussed this with a million other guests, right? And, you know, one of the things that is suspect, and Doug, I just wonder what it would take to launch an investigation. How much evidence is necessary before something is done? And as an investigator, maybe you can help me understand what it would take. But his taste in artwork and his brother Tony's taste in artwork is peculiar, to say the least, and very suspect, in my opinion. Very distasteful, I think, at the very least. And I think that also speaks to character. I don't know that it speaks to much more than that, but I don't think it's enough to launch an investigation. But what do you think it would take to launch an investigation, a real investigation? And we're going to talk about Comet Ping Pong here in a second, but what would it take to get a real investigation launched, be it against Podesta, Elefantis, or, I don't know, anybody that's involved in this?
If speaking from an investigative position, where are the victims?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question number one. Now, if they are children, minors, of course, as we do suspect, and regardless of who the suspected perpetrator or perpetrators are, you have to ask yourself, where are the victims? And if they're minors, where are their parents? And then you have to look at potential complicity as we look at this by the parents. As horrible as that would even begin to think. So what would it take to launch an investigation? A complaint by a victim or the guardian or parent of a victim, obviously, number one. Number two, a receptive police force or investigative agency would be the second most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, and since you brought it up, bad taste in artwork doesn't quite cut it. However, it does go to a course of activity that is consistent with, at least in my personal opinion now, a behavioral or a predilection toward, the perverse, in my view.
And when you tie the artwork to specifically the coded language in the emails, and then the spirit cooking, the artwork and the spirit cooking, and those two, if you just look into spirit cooking, it explains the artwork, you know, the cannibalistic nature, and then you look at the emails, the code words, the symbols, and all the evidence that's there. It all does tie each piece together when you stand back and take a look at it, and it's shocking.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Joe. It's that Marina Abramovic artwork and the spirit cooking that really woke up a lot of the researchers originally in the emails. And then as they dug deeper, they discovered what's being called this pedophilic code that's peppered throughout so many of these emails. And I think, you know, Paul Williams really hit it right when he said his faith was shattered. You know, it's devastating to find out that there is a deep state network, a network so powerful that it remains long after our elected officials come and go. And yes, that is what President Trump is really facing. That's what all presidents are facing, the ones that aren't maybe bought and paid for right from the start, like I believe Obama was. So I think the problem here is, and you mentioned, Doug, where are the victims? Well, again, in the case of on-the-record victims, right, with the 80 kids from the Franklin cover-up, 78 were told to recant. Some of them ended up murdered. Two of them went to prison. In the case of Laura Silsby, now known as Laura Silsby Gaylor, working for AlertSense, when she was trafficking 33 children out of Haiti and she got caught, we have those victims, we have those parents, and she only did 6 months in the clink. How do you try... Explain that to me. How does one traffic children and get caught at the border and only do 6 months in jail? Well, the answer is the Clinton Foundation rides to the rescue.
Exactly.
And here's the other thing. Can you please explain to me what kind of human resources department they have over at AlertSense? Because I would think it would be really hard to get a job at your local Walmart or Target store as a cashier if you had on your record convicted child trafficker. But she is working as a, what, senior director of marketing, I believe, over at AlertSense? How does that work?
Well, speaks to the connections. That speaks to the, in my mind, continued criminal conspiracy and crime surrounding that. Because she's, again, given a position of access working in a field that deals with children with a record of being a child trafficker, which doesn't make any sense. As you said, you would have a hard time getting a job as a cashier at McDonald's with a record like that.
Right. And Sean, you pointed this out as well, okay? The Clinton Foundation, with respect to Haiti, given the time frame, perhaps, and I don't know this for a fact, but if this would have happened, we'll say, with another country other than Haiti, think of Canada, perhaps, or some other country other than Haiti, or that kind of country, the results might have been different. But you had Hillary as Secretary of State, and even before her position, she was heavily involved in overseeing that operation and being real cozy with Laura Silsby. You had the Clinton Foundation throwing money everywhere and grabbing money everywhere. So all of this together is very well and meticulously planned, I believe. And I just wanted to go back and address the victims. Folks, you know, I know this, and I've gotten a page of emails already about this. Well, the victims are either dead or no one's listening to them, or they're...
Well, they're voiceless.
Exactly.
Especially the
folks,
ones...
I know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know that, but I guess the question, just to speak to your question, and that's what would it take? It would take a complainant, in this case. Moving along with that. So yeah, continue, sir, because this is really the meat of it, and yeah.
Well, it is, because it's really easy to, you know, lose the forest for the trees and get into all of the minutiae of details. I mean, this is literally a hornet's nest. If you dig in, you know, dig in a little bit, you're going to find a lot more than you expected. And that's what all these wonderful researchers are doing. Many of them, like I said before, nameless. One of them, Titus Frost, has done an exceptional piece of work, and I want to share that with you in a second. But I just want to say this, as it pertains to Podesta's interview, in which he said, it's all been debunked. When the mainstream media hasn't addressed any of these issues, not a single issue that Pizzagate Angela brought up, that I brought up last time I was on, none of the issues are ever addressed. It's a little bit like Building 7 on 9/11. You know, look everywhere but there. Okay, so what did we know about John Podesta prior to Pizzagate, the term, becoming a household name in our circles? Well, Andrew Breitbart, as I covered last time, tweeted out, in February of 2011, how prog guru John Podesta isn't a household name as world-class underage sex slave op cover-upper defending unspeakable dregs escapes me. Okay, well, what does that mean? Andrew Breitbart was a very smart guy. How come he didn't explain that further? Well, he didn't get the chance. He was dead less than a year later. So, again, where there's smoke, there's fire. What did Andrew Breitbart know? And in fact, why was Andrew Breitbart so angry with John Podesta? I'll play this clip.
I am interested in this ongoing, whatever the hell they're doing.
What's in your closet, John Podesta?
So there was something at play between John Podesta, the Clinton administration, and Andrew Breitbart. And as you guys know, I think Andrew Breitbart had a lot more to say and was getting ready to say it when he conveniently died of what we're told is a heart attack, and then his coroner died of arsenic poisoning. Where there's smoke, yeah, there's fire.
Yeah, and also, you know, if you look at the Clinton body count, folks who might not be familiar with that, the number of people who are associated with Clinton and Clinton-related politics in Washington and other things surrounding the Clinton family, how many people have ended up dead. And there was just a story today, though it's been floating around for the last few days, and I'm looking at my history right now. There was a associate of the Clintons, he was a Chinese man, who made a video that his friend named
Johnny Wong, H-U-A-N-G.
And he made this video that his friend entitled Insurance Policy, just for the fact that he was afraid he was going to be assassinated by the Clintons for funneling money from China to the Clintons' election campaign, to Bill Clinton's last election campaign. And so, I mean, there are a lot of people, and folks know Vince Foster and so many of the other Clinton-related deaths, and some of those are even talked about.
Yeah, and Sean, I want to mention this, and I don't know how far you've gone with this, but the more I look at the Foster situation, given his morality and his integrity, at least that's what many of his friends had said, the man of integrity, he was troubled, and I do believe he found something more than financial irregularities or travel office problems. I think that there was something else there. That has come up two or three different times in my research of this topic. I'm just throwing that out there.
No, I 100% agree, and anybody who's done any research on that will come to the conclusion, as I think initially, at least some of the private investigators have come to the conclusion, that that body was moved. That body didn't die where it was found. I think that you're absolutely right. There are a lot of unanswered questions about what really happened to Vince Foster. But, you know, Joe, you made a great point about insurance policies, because it drew to mind what I think may have been labeled as such by Anthony Weiner when all of these emails were found on his computer. And it was, I think, the head of the New York Police Department came out and said, there's evidence of all sorts of child trafficking and terrible things here. And we haven't heard nary an additional word about that. And it really calls to mind what's going on here. Why are these things being covered up? What was on Anthony Weiner's email? Of course, being the husband to Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's right-hand gal. So there's just so many ways for the truth to spill out if we could just, Mr. President, have a return to rule of law. And so I want to just stay on this track for a bit longer, if I may, about Podesta, John Podesta. What was known about John Podesta prior to even Andrew Breitbart saying what he said? What was known about John Podesta and his brother Tony prior to Pizzagate becoming a household name? Well, this is an interesting piece of evidence and research, I should say, from Smoke Mirrors on Vote. And are you guys familiar? You recall that eFit of John and Tony Podesta, which was released, I believe, in 2012, of two suspects in the disappearance of Madeleine McCain that very, very, very closely resemble John and Tony Podesta?
Yeah, Sean, let me stop you right there. We're at the bottom of the hour break, but I want to pick up exactly here, because I have a question that I need to ask you about that.
Perfect.
That I have not been able to verify. We're speaking with Sean from SGT Report. If you're not following him, and if you're not watching his YouTubes, you're missing out on a lot. He's an intrepid investigator. Sean from the SGT Report. We're going to be right back, folks. Give us 3 minutes. See you on the other side. Stay with us.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
There shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
New Year from all of us at Trading Post in the Woods.
We pray you have a healthy, safe, and prosperous 2017.
And we would like to thank all of you for welcoming us to the Hagman and Hagman family. You're all a very wonderful and special group of people.
Because we believe it is so important for you to work and acquire good health this year, we're going to do something that we've never done before as a thank you to you for your support. We're going to make something available that we believe everyone needs.
During the month of January, anyone who invests in their health by purchasing either our American Heritage Remedies Kit, our Survivalist Natural Remedies Kit, or $200 in individual remedies of your choice, we're going to give to you our crisis remedy, just in case, for free. Your health must be a part of your preparation plan. We're here to help you with that journey. May God bless y'all, and may God bless America.
Happy New Year!
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes.
You keep holding on.
That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Hagman Report, Hagman and Hagman Report, HagmanReport.com. That's our website, HagmanandHagman.com. We are going to resurrect HomeOnSecurityUS.com specifically for research aggregation of results on this topic, as well as others, including the Muslim infiltration in the United States. We're also working on a couple of other initiatives as well, including the Christian Marketplace. Folks, those who have signed up, who signed up for that early on, that we dropped the ball on, I guarantee you, you're going to be really happy, and we're going to be resurging rebooting that here in the next couple of days. Our guest is Sean from SGT Report. Before we get back to Sean, I just want to thank our friends at our very, very good friends at Trading Post in the Woods, TradingPostsInTheWoods.com. You know, they've got all sorts of products, homeopathy. I always have a hard time saying that word. They have an American Heritage Remedies Kit. It's a deluxe package made especially for the Hagman Report. It contains, I just used some of their tinctures out of this remedies kit today. These work. Let me just tell you. Trading Post in the Woods is an American owned and operated company. It's a store run by a crisis team of first responders. They know what they're talking about. They put together some amazing, absolutely amazing products. They are the place to go. If you recall when there were no pharmacies, just Trading Posts. Well, that is this, and they are good. TradingPostsInTheWoods.com. That's TradingPostsInTheWoods.com. I want to thank them so much. Sean from the SGT Report, we left off with John Podesta before he was known as to the world as Skippy, I guess, or at least known to us, his background. Fire away, where we left off.
Right, Skippy, I guess his evil twin's name by his own account. I don't know. I think that's bizarre. I don't have an alternate personality with a nickname. But so my question before the break was, do you guys recall the e-fit of the two suspects that look like the Podesta brothers? I sent over John, your producer, a couple of those e-fits. I don't know if you're able to put those on screen, but for those that are watching live, these were sketches that were released in 2013. Now, Maddie McCann disappeared from Portugal in May of 2007. So it is extremely unusual that so many years later these sketches would be released. And even more unusual that these sketches would be the spitting image of John and Tony Podesta. I mean, not even just close, but I mean exact. If you asked an artist to sketch these guys, that's what it would look like.
Sean, can you verify the authenticity? I mean, did those sketches indeed come from the investigative body of Madeleine McCann?
That's what I wanted to share, because I did an interview with my friend researcher Ole Damegaard, and Ole Damegaard remembered well and had researched a lot of the Maddie McCann stuff when she went missing. And he said that sketch makes no sense. He had never seen it before, and we just did this interview a few months back. He said that sketch makes no sense because they were only looking for one suspect. And I said, I know, and that's what makes the sketch so powerful, because if they're only looking for one suspect, why does it look like two different people who happen to look exactly like these brothers? And so the research that I wanted to share before we went to break from Vote is from Smoke Mirrors. And the name of this article, if you want to Google it on Vote, vote.co, is Link Between the Podesta Group and Madeleine McCann via Washington, D.C.-based ex-spy detective Kevin Halligan. Now, I'd let listeners go and read this themselves. I won't read the whole thing, but I just want to share this. Many believe the two e-fits released in the search for Madeleine McCann's abductors bear more than a passing resemblance to John and Tony Podesta. The two EFITs were commissioned in 2008, but not released until 2013 by a fraudulent Irish MI5 GCHQ detective, Kevin Halligan. Now, it says here that his antics are worthy of a whole other separate thread, but his company, Oakley International, was hired by the McCanns to look into the case of missing Madeline. His associate, another MI5 spy, Henry Exton, produced the actual EFITs. All right. It goes on to basically draw a connection between Oakley International, which was based out of, I'll give you the address, 2550 Main Street, I believe, Northwest Washington, D.C. This address is also the office of Patton Blogs, Washington's most politically connected law firm and lobbyist organization. It goes on basically to ask this question. Why did Kevin Halligan commission the EFITs in 2008? Goes on to ask, what dirt do Kevin Halligan and Patton Boggs have on the Podesta Group and or the whereabouts of the Podesta brothers in May 2007? Now, guys, you'll remember the last time I was on your show, I mentioned the fact that the WikiLeaks emails, the Podesta emails, there's a hole, an entire month around the time that Maddie went to disappeared in Portugal. There's just no emails around that time. And many have come to believe that the Podesta brothers were staying in Portugal at Clement Freud's villa, Clement Freud, a known pedophile who is now dead. Now, Clement Freud befriended the McCanns, which I think is very weird because at the time, well, we don't know for sure if they knew. Maybe they were in on this whole thing. I don't know. But he befriended them while they were going through all of this.
Post-abduction, I believe, right?
Invited them over for lunch and, you know, befriended them. So there's this very real question about where were John and Tony Podesta during this period. Were they in Portugal? I'm not saying they were involved in the disappearance of that little girl, but I would love to know if they were in the area when she vanished. Did they have anything to do with it? These EFITs would suggest maybe they did. So this article just goes on to basically leave the reader with a couple of conclusions. Either the people that commissioned those EFITs were blackmailing the Podestas, or they just know what's really going on and the Podestas were involved. I mean, that's sort of my interpretation. Because I would think that the person who commissioned these EFITs, who apparently were paid $500,000 by Jerry and Kate McCann, as this article says, to put their faith in a random Washington, D.C. based detective, Kevin Halligan, who mysteriously reached out to them telling them he could find their daughter. Was Halligan actually bribing Jerry and Kate? Or was he bribing the Podestas? Anyway, we've wondered what those EFITs were about for a very long time, and I thought that was a very important nugget that we found on Vote.
Extremely important. And I think, I mean, this is a key here. I from the investigative, my investigative viewpoint, you're looking at a very curious amount of time that elapsed between the time of abduction until the publication or release of those sketches.
Right.
And the people involved, as you laid very succinctly laid out there, the connections are troubling. And this troubles me. Any time in my 30 years as an investigator, if somebody had come to me, and I've worked on unsolved homicides before, with something like this, in that fashion, man, I'd have more questions than, this whole thing is suspect. So, I do believe there is a secondary, element. I'll just leave it at that. A secondary element at play here. And I think you referenced a couple of possibilities there. It's got to be one or both, or more.
Yeah. And again, my point here is to not say that anybody's guilty or innocent. My point is to say that regardless of Pizzagate, there were questions about John and Tony Podesta related to this type of activity before anybody had ever heard of Comet Ping Pong. And by the way, I think it's a little suspect that Jake Tapper over at CNN has a wife named Jennifer who was interviewed by Washingtonian a year before we ever heard of Pizzagate. And in that interview, she said their favorite family restaurant is Comet Ping Pong. And their favorite.
I heard you mention that. Yeah.
Their favorite.
I heard you mention that. By the way, in your folks, in the link, I just want to remind people again, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just want to make sure people, or just go to SGT Report, their YouTube. You've got to watch and, spread on social networking, or if you can, your last Pizzagate with Angela. You referenced exactly this. I am so sorry to interrupt, but people have got to spread this word, man.
Thank you for saying that. And I would just say, they said that their favorite date night restaurant was Buck's, which is in that same block, the same vicinity, and has been named as a place potentially worthy of investigation, you know, because of the John Podesta WikiLeaks emails in this whole investigation, which is now sort of known as Pizzagate. So, again, so now I've sort of mentioned Comet Ping Pong by way of that article and Jennifer Tapper. By the way, Jake Tapper is completely mowed over this whole thing. He's gone out of his way to try to malign Pizzagate. There's certainly not going to be any investigation from CNN. So, but I do find it fascinating, you know, in a city as vibrant and with so many world-class restaurants as Washington, D.C., that those would have been the two restaurants she named. Okay, so here's a piece of research that I wanted to share with you guys from Titus Frost. He's on YouTube. You can find him there as Titus Frost. And this is a bit of research that he'd been sitting on for a while. And apparently he and some hackers had been working with the Washington, D.C. police. And more than a month and a half later, there had been no results. So he finally went public. So if you don't mind, let me just play this clip for you. It's not that long. How much time do we have left?
We got about 15 minutes at least to go. In
this segment. This is just a couple of minutes, and I think it's very important because then we'll remind everybody of why this evidence, if it existed, just miraculously went away. Here's Titus Frost.
I covered how Comet Ping Pong and how Buck's Fishing and Camping both had these protected sections set up on their websites, and we found that to be extraordinarily weird and interesting. And I had passed this website around to a bunch of hackers to see if they could get into the website and see what was inside of there. So you can see here from inside their website, you have the different files with different download keys needed. Now, the hacker was able to get those download keys and was able to access these files and found that these files contained what's known as cheese pizza, aka child porn. Thus, this is the smoking gun evidence I have been alluding to for a very long time. This is the bombshell information I've been sitting on since December that I've been waiting because the police asked us not to release this information because they were investigating leads of the people that were spreading this information, this data around. However, it's been too long now for that to still be the case. There should have been arrests made by now, which is why I'm releasing this information now. So here's the thing. The hacker accessed the Comet Ping Pong website illegally via hacking and submitted that information to the police, which I'll show you the emails for in a second, to and from the police. However, the police were not able to use that data because it was obtained illegally, so you're not allowed to use that as evidence. However, when Edgar Madison Welch walked into Comet Ping Pong and shot off a single shot, supposedly that single shot went through the wall, not into the floor, went through the wall and into Comet's office and struck a computer hard drive.
All right. So, if that's true, and I'm going to play a clip for you right now that proves it is true, that is the official story that the magic operative, Edgar Walsh, walked in and fired a shot which miraculously hit the hard drive of the Comet Ping Pong computer, in James Alefantis' own words. Here it is.
Alefantis says he wouldn't have found anything exciting.
And here is our bags and coat closet. The bullet went into our computer system.
After police arrived, Welch surrendered peacefully.
All right. So, Mr. Hagman, I really must ask you, as a person with so many years of experience as an investigator, don't you find that more than just a little coincidental?
I'd be going to Vegas. Yeah. And honestly, I did not realize this.
It's the first time I've heard about it.
If I'm understanding this correctly, and maybe I just, I don't know, maybe I zoned out, before. But so the shot that was reportedly fired inside Comet Pizza struck a hard drive, right?
According to James Alefantis, yes. The same James Alefantis who went on Fox News and got a free pass from Megyn Kelly for about an 11-minute PR session in which not one difficult question, not one question of any type, was asked of him about the weirdness that he's been involved with, including his Instagram account. So, in Alefantis' own words, see, it's a little bit like the JFK assassination, isn't it? I would really call that a magic bullet.
Indeed. All right. That does add another dimension, in my view, completely to this whole thing. For whatever reason, no excuses, but I just didn't know that. I didn't know that. And did they produce a hard drive? I mean,
I don't think they're being asked to produce anything, and that's the problem. And I'd like to know. And I should try to talk to Titus Frost about this, because I thought, if you listen to that entire video, I think he might have mentioned December 5th as having been a day they communicated with the Washington, D.C. police. But I'm not going to swear by that. Because if it was prior to that, let's say it was a few days before that, recall that the operational false flag gunman, Edgar Welch, that's my opinion of what he is, walked into Comet Ping Pong and fired that magic bullet on December 4th. So let's say that the hackers and Titus Frost and whoever made contact with the Washington, D.C. Police Department and tried to turn this stuff over, let's say that contact was made December 2nd, December 1st. Maybe it was December 5th. I'm not sure. Regardless, that hard drive, by the way, I'm no computer expert, but I bet you files and data could still be gleaned from that hard drive, even if it was directly hit by a bullet, which I find absolutely astonishing to even believe for a second.
Roger that. With respect to the hard drive, and I don't know, I haven't followed the status of this reported shooter, but one of the things that it would be customary in a case like this is for the police, in order to advance the trial through the DA's office, would be to confiscate the hard drive wherever the bullet ended, the projectile ended, whatever it might be. In this case, a hard drive, they would have to confiscate the bullet and or the hard drive as well. But you're right. I mean, unless it was one magic bullet.
You know, that's interesting that you'd say that. You make a great point. And so correct me if I'm wrong. What you're saying is, because the hard drive, the claim here is by Alefantis, is that that computer tower, they show it here in the video. You guys can't see it. I'll send you the clip if you'd like it. They show him. So he's given a tour to the camera crew saying, oh, if he had just come in and looked in our closet, you know, we didn't even have a basement, so he wouldn't have found anything. But ironically, here's our computer, and it was hit by his bullet. So they're showing this hard drive. So this, again, another PR moment for Alefantis, giving the news crew this tour. To your point, that should have been taken by the police as evidence of Edgar Welch's crime, correct? Because it's still here in this clip, and Alefantis is showing the news crew.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's just the criminal part of this. But the civil part of this, if Alefantis or the victim claims property damage as a result of this magic bullet and says, look, to his insurance carrier, look, I'm out a $3,500 computer or whatever it might be, the insurance company has the right to inspect the damage, and that would include if they are going to, once that's released from the criminal part of that, part of this, the insurance company has a right to inspect and to secure possession of that damaged piece of equipment.
Well, I know you guys... You'd never heard that clip before of Alefantis. So if you don't mind, even for myself, for the audience, let's play that one more time, because I think very, very important. Because, again, this is going to go down as the Pizzagate magic bullet. Let's listen to this.
Alefantis says he wouldn't have found anything exciting.
And here is our bags and coat closet. The bullet went into our computer system.
After police arrived, Welch surrendered peacefully.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't on the Warren Commission. I didn't help cover up the, you know, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But if I was on the Pizzagate Commission, this is exactly the type of testimony that I would love to have to help paint the false narrative.
Absolutely. Wow. That's an amazing presentation that you just gave with respect to that whole aspect of this. Do we know, Sean, did this alleged shooter, did he plead? Has he pled out? What's his status? Do we know?
You know, I ought to be able to give you an update on that. And to be honest with you, I'm really not following that particular individual because I don't think that that is a legitimate story. And I really don't want to go off on any tangent following him. Many others have done the work that have revealed his, you know, participation in some movies, and supposedly he is or has been an actor. I just think that that was an orchestrated event to help divert attention away from Comet Ping Pong as an establishment that ought to be investigated for potential crimes against children, and to instead paint a narrative that brought empathy and sympathy to James Elefantis and Comet Ping Pong, and also to disparage all investigators that have been digging into this by way of this one lone nut who walked in there and did this one thing that none of us would ever dream of doing nor ask anyone to ever do. In fact, we would plead that no one ever do what he did, which to me really kind of speaks more to the convenience of the whole thing that this happened. How convenient. It gave them the opportunity for mainstream media to take that narrative and steer it into, you know, spin it on its head and to point it back that we're all the nut people. We're all the crazy people.
Well, after all, fake news has real life consequences, and here's Exhibit A.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Oh, man.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we've come full circle. We haven't even come full circle. I'm just scratching the surface. But, you know, I do think it's fascinating that Hunter S. Thompson went on David Letterman in 87 or 88 before really anybody knew about it. Nobody knew about Jimmy Savile, really, in our country. Right. Certainly there were whistleblowers at the BBC that knew, like Johnny Rotten and others. And those people paid a price for trying to speak up. Well, why is that? Well, because Jimmy Savile had been knighted by the Queen and was such good friends with Prince Charles that Prince Charles wanted Jimmy Savile to be the godfather to his own sons. So none of us had heard of Jimmy Savile. None of us had heard of Sir Edward Heath, who is now being accused of having been involved in the murders of 16 children in a satanic ring. Hmm. So here we sit talking about Pizzagate. Yep. And still, the mainstream media wants to malign us, just like the mainstream media, the BBC, maligned any of the victims that spoke out against Jimmy Savile while he was still alive.
Sean, in the remaining minutes we've got left, we're getting pummeled. You know, Angela got her Twitter account suspended. Others, the shots are coming in fast and furious, pun intended. What are you doing to protect yourself? Without being specific, how do we keep this alive? What's the best way to approach this? And I'm turning to you now for your expertise in this. You're the guy that knows more about social media and really in this realm. So, what do we need to do here at this point, in your view?
Well, look, now we're seeing the blatant, overt, angry face of Big Brother himself, because in November of this past year, the CEO of Google came out and said, there is no place at Google for fake news. So he positioned himself and Google as being the arbiters of what is and is not fake news. And if anybody thought they were going to go to, you know, 0 to 100 miles an hour in just a couple of months, I didn't. I thought it would be a slow trickle over time. But I'll tell you what. They closed down Natural News. They scrubbed 140,000 pages of Mike Adams' material, Natural News material, a lot of very truthful, well-researched, important material, running the gamut of GMOs and vaccines and the dangers of Fukushima radiation and so many other things, natural remedies, all gone because Big Brother said, no room for fake news. So now we stand at the cusp of fascism. What George Orwell wrote about in 1984, that book should have been called 2017, because it is here and it is now. And what they've done to my friend Pizzagate Angela is really beyond the pale, because she's just a mom. This is a citizen investigation. And if anybody doesn't think where there's smoke, there's fire, then you tell me why big bad Twitter would have to shut down a mom. Is she that far off the mark, or is she that over the target? That is the question that needs to be asked. And why should Google be allowed to do what they're doing? Do we live in a fascist society where corporations run everything? More and more, it looks like the answer is yes. Because if Google is allowed to do what they've done to Natural News and Mike Adams, then none of us are safe, Doug.
Sorry, you are 100% accurate. And I'll tell you something. We must all band together, Sean. I believe this more today than ever before. All of us, we must support one another. Those who are working actively, like yourself, to uncover this perversity that exists and to save the children. This is about the children victims. This is about not just exposing and getting justice for the people who are doing this, but for saving the children. And I've seen law enforcement photographs of children in cages. And if you want something to break your heart, And to piss you off at the same time, that's it. So, but we need to stick together and uplift one another, assist one another. And I can guarantee you this, Sean, we are here for you. Our audience, I know, is here for you as well. And whatever we can possibly do to advance your research, your investigation, and to have your back, you've got our word.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Doug and Joe, you guys are great. And you're trailblazers. Thanks for giving me the platform. Thanks for giving Pizzagate Angela the platform. She's a mom. She's a sweet Christian woman doing the work that MSNBC and CNN won't do. Remember that, amen, folks. Let that be an inspiration to you.
God bless you, my friend. Thank you, Sean, SGT Report. God bless you, my friend. Stay safe. And
all right.
We'll be praying for you. Thank you.
You too. God bless, guys. Thanks.
When we come back, Stan Deo will be our guest, as he is each and every Tuesday night. Go to standeo.com, click on the show images page, and follow along with Stan's research and what he's going to be talking about tonight. So stay with us for our third and final hour with Stan Deo.
I just want to say, this is war, folks. This is war.
Yes, it is.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.